Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Welcome one, welcome all. It is Monday, Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL Show. Welcome to the Monday after Week 17. A reminder before we keep going that this show is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That is code SBNFL only at DraftKings Sportsbook. As mentioned, this is the SB Nation NFL Show where we love the NFL, and the NFL is the proverbial gift that keeps on giving. We want to wish you all a very happy new year. We have a lot to get into. I say we, the fantastic Rachelle Prevett, as always, is on the ones and twos. I am RG Ochoa, and my co-pilot, we are basically the reincarnated version of Top Gun. I know they had the new movie this past summer, but we're the main show. It is Pete Sweeney from SB Nation's Arrowhead Pride. Pete, do you have a flight suit? Have you ever worn one for a Halloween?
No, but what I did have at the end of the summer was a mustache, which I felt... was a good look for a little bit. And then, you know, once the season started, I figured, you know, we should go with the regular beard.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You ever, you have some aviators maybe that you wear? Like, do you ever do that? Or
yeah, I got some aviators that I wear, maybe do that. Just depends on the day. I feel like maybe the Top Gun thing is more of a late October. You know, this is a time for resolutions. It's time to be resolute. Happy 2023 to you. Another year of Monday
Resolute
Football Monday.
Desk. Was an integral part in finding the Declaration of Independence map or whatever it was, the treasure that Nicolas Cage was looking for. Remember that? Right. The Resolute Desk? There are two of them. So you have one, I have one, in a metaphorical sense, of course.
The core part of that movie was there's a treasure map on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
Right. Good call there. The Declaration of Independence was written a very, very long time ago. I believe Tom Brady's rookie year in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, of course, NFC South champions after their big win on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. Joining us here now on the SB Nation NFL Show to talk about the back-to-back NFC South champions is James Yarko from Bucs Nation. James, thank you so much for joining us here. Congratulations to the Bucs. Good times, even though it felt like it wasn't going to happen. I didn't ask you before we started, an Illinois guy, so you must have loved the Lovie Smith era.
Oh, yeah, Lovie Smith. I believe after Illinois hired Lovie Smith, I texted my dad to let him know, and he responded with, "Haven't we suffered enough?" So, yeah, only Lovie Smith could take a top five passing defense in all of college football and move it into the bottom five in 1 year. So, yeah, excited that Illinois is finally playing in a legit bowl game for the first time in I can't remember how long. So, but yes, Tom Brady's signature is on the Declaration of Independence. And now... You talk about a roller coaster, right? I mean, this entire season has been the definition of a roller coaster year for Buccaneers fans. And somehow, some way, they figure it out and they win back-to-back NFC South titles for the first time since the inception of the NFC South.
Mm, that is, I mean, we're talking all the way since 2002, and it has been kind of a topsy-turvy, obvious, you know, division. But Tom Brady's brought stability. The one, obviously, Super Bowl season was not even as the NFC South winner. I think that is kind of a forgotten detail there. Do you feel like the Bucs are now starting to find their form? Because this was a kind of low-key interesting game. The Panthers were up early. I cover the Cowboys here at SB Nation, so we obviously had our eyes very focused on this and obviously might have them even more focused in the coming weeks. But do you feel like the Bucs are finding their form? Is this the best that they have looked all season? Because this was a Mike Evans explosion that we've kind of grown accustomed to.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the best they've looked all season just because of how bad the run game still was in this game, But you take a look at what they were finally able to do. And that, of course, was to get the Tom Brady, Mike Evans connection back up and running. And they did it in a huge way. Mike Evans ends up just 2 yards short of matching his career high, which he set as a rookie against the Cleveland Browns when it was Mike Evans versus Johnny Manziel. But you take a look at what they were able to do offensively. Tom Brady completes 75% of his passes, throws for over 400. This is the first time they put up 30 or more points since their loss to the Chiefs back in week four, which ironically enough was the last time Mike Evans had scored a touchdown before his hat trick. The big thing to look at with this Buccaneers offense is we've known they've had the skill and the players to accomplish this kind of vertical assault offense. They've done it the last 2 years. They brought in Russell Gage. They brought in Julio Jones. Now you're 1 week away from potentially getting Ryan Jensen back at center. And that changes everything, literally everything for this offense. The running lanes get a little bit wider. Tom Brady isn't having to get the ball out of his hands in 2 seconds because the pressure is coming up the middle. And nothing against Robert Hainsey. He has stepped in and played very, very well for someone who had never played center in his life. He was a guard at Notre Dame. He was a guard and a tackle when he was in high school. Has never played center until the Buccaneers drafted him and said, oh, by the way, we're going to convert you to a center now. So all of a sudden, Ryan Jensen unlocks the half of the playbook that Byron Leftwich said that they haven't even touched into because they just haven't had the confidence to be able to do so. The other question is, once Ryan Jensen comes back, what do you do at left guard? Obviously, you had Ali Marpet retire. Then you have Aaron Stinney go down, and that's a huge loss. So you start with the rookie Luke Goedeke. He struggles. Now Nick Leverett has played really, really well. Does he stay there? Or do you slide Robert Hainsey over to his original position and really fortify that offensive line? As soon as that happens, this offense is going to look completely different from what we've seen all year long.
Good to hear that the offensive line is getting shored up ahead of this Buccaneers Cowboys game, because you know when the Cowboys are down, that makes me happy. RJ, not so much. I want to touch upon the running game here. As you mentioned, Leonard Fournette, 10 carries for 28 yards in this game. Rashad White, 11 carries for 22 yards. The output's not great. Is it simply the offensive line, or is it a case where you like one running back more than another?
I think both running backs really have their advantages, but Rashad White throughout the season has looked a little more decisive, a little more explosive, a little more patient at times. But both guys are threats in the run game. Both guys are threats in the passing game, and both guys can pick up blitzes. So you really don't telegraph what you're doing offensively based on what running back is in the game. I think it was a matter of the Panthers were going to make sure that they turned the Bucs into a one-dimensional team by stopping Rashad White, by stopping Leonard Fournette, who had a great game on Christmas Day against the Arizona Cardinals, both rushing and receiving. And in doing so, they kind of unlocked Brady to Evans, and I don't think that was their intent. But they, you know, the Bucs have struggled throughout the year. They've had spurts. They've had moments. RJ, I know you remember how well Leonard Fournette did against the Cowboys in week one. So again, it goes with the roller coaster motif, right? It's been up and down. There have been great flashes. There have been terrible moments. And it just hasn't been their year in the run game. I think a lot of that can be attributed to kind of the constant rotation at offensive line. You've had injuries to Donovan Smith. You've had injuries to Tristan Wirfs. You've had injuries along the interior. So all of that kind of plays a part in what's been going on. And I think one of the other big problems that not a lot of people talk about is the predictability of running the ball. It seems like 80% of the time, Byron Leftwich is going to run the ball on first and 10. And teams are stacking the box and taking that away. And Byron hasn't really adjusted to that. You know, Tom Brady's one of the best play action quarterbacks in the National Football League. When teams are expecting a run every first down, that's when you can run that play action and you can find Mike Evans deep. You can find Chris Godwin crossing over the middle. You can find Julio for a big gain, who, you know, he's played well the last couple of weeks as well, you know, bouncing back from that injury. But again, Ryan Jensen comes back and all bets are off.
James, so the Bucks now in a really interesting situation, and particularly because the Eagles lost on Sunday afternoon. Now, every single team in the NFC playoff picture that's a division leader or going to win their division has something to play for to some degree. Obviously, some things are more likely, some things are not. The New York Giants are locked into the second wild card spot. They're the only other team in this same boat that the Bucks are in. The Bucks have nothing to play for. Can't gain anything, can't lose anything. They will be the four seed. They will host the Dallas Cowboys or the Philadelphia Eagles, whoever does not win the NFC East. So do you think, what is your initial assessment? Will the Bucks play for anything in Atlanta on Sunday? Will they call off the dogs? Will Tom Brady play? What is your general kind of outlook right now?
I think at worst, and I say that for lack of a better term, you're looking at the Bucks starters probably playing the first half. You don't want to have an explosion on offense. You don't want to have a connection like you had with Brady and Evans in this game. Chris Godwin, his game is completely overshadowed. He had a season high in receiving yards with 120, nine catches on nine targets. He had a great game. You don't want to come off of that kind of performance and immediately bench all the guys that did that, right? You're going to kind of stall what they have going. So I think the Bucks could play, you know, the starters could play the first half, regardless of what the situation is. You could see guys start to come out of the game. You pull Brady. You could even pull Tristan Wirfs and Donovan Smith, who've been battling through injuries. You could pull Mike. You could pull Chris. But the other thing is do you really want to limp into the playoffs at 8-9? You're going to get Carlton Davis back. You're going to get Ryan Jensen back. You're going to get Carl Nassib back, which is going to be a huge boost for the defense. But you really want to go into a home playoff game against, you know, the Cowboys or the Eagles at 8-9 off of a loss to the Atlanta Falcons? Probably not. But conventional wisdom would tell you, yeah, you also don't want to risk Tom Brady going down or Mike Evans getting injured or anything like that.
We'll certainly see about the Philadelphia Eagles. They have the New York Giants in that final game. And as RJ said, the Giants are locked in. It's always wondering what teams are going to do. You have some teams that'll rest, and then you have others like the Jaguars. Nothing to play for yesterday, but they were playing everybody. So we'll see. When it comes to the pulse of the Bucs fan base, who do you think the Buccaneers fans would like to see the team play, Cowboys or Eagles, and why?
I actually spoke about this on another show yesterday. I think Bucs fans would take a look at the two matchups and would prefer the Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys defense is absolutely fantastic. You can't take anything away from them, but you take a look at what Carlton Davis has done the last couple of weeks before missing the Panthers game with an injury. Absolutely phenomenal job against Jamar Chase. Absolutely phenomenal job against DeAndre Hopkins. He can do the exact same thing to CeeDee Lamb. And you take a look at what Philadelphia can do. And one of the biggest issues that the Bucs have is trying to contain a mobile quarterback. We saw Patrick Mahomes in week four be able to extend plays with his legs. We saw Lamar Jackson get the Baltimore Ravens rolling in the second half of that game and come from behind and beat the Buccaneers on Thursday Night Football. The Bucs have problems with mobile quarterbacks. Dak is not Jalen Hurts when it comes to that mobility. So I think overall the Bucs match up better against the Cowboys, and that's probably going to be the preferred matchup. If the Bucs were to go on to win and Tom Brady maintains his undefeated record against the Dallas Cowboys, you may run into the Philadelphia Eagles anyway, but you cross that bridge when you get to it. But overall, the Cowboys are a better matchup for what the Bucs can do and what they can stop.
7-0 against the Dallas Cowboys, Tom Brady is, and 2-0 as a member of the Bucs. Dak Prescott famously told Brady after last year's season opener, I'm sure you remember, that they would see them again. That didn't happen a year ago, and they did meet in the season opener this year, but kind of a flat game that the Bucs won. We'll see. James, maybe you and I will be talking in a week's time on Twitter at @JYarko_Bucs. That's Yarko, C-H. Nobody get it wrong. From Bucs Nation. James, thank you so much for joining us today. Enjoy the week. Kind of a more chill operation before it gets all tense and stressful next week.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. And RJ, I'm sure we'll be speaking real soon.
We'll see about that. But go Giants is all I have to say. Thank you, James. Have a great day. Happy New Year to you and yours. Pete Tweeney, kind of a crazy Sunday across the NFL.
Crazy. Now, yeah, crazy. Couple Y's on the end. You know what I mean? It's
oh, yeah, crazy. Like you do
this
the,
is crazy. Yeah. Really excited text that you might send for example.
So just to set the stage for like kind of how my mind was approaching this, this was a great day. You've experienced this where you get your game done. You do your work on Thursday. I'm going to sit back, relax. I'm going to enjoy Sunday. Scott Hansen, you and me, 7 hours, commercial free football. Let's do this dance together. I'm thinking
they gifted me that last night, actually, but go ahead.
Right. For next week, for week 18. Well, you know, not quite as cool because it's week 18 and a lot of these games are going to be kind of flat, like you talked about. But so I'm thinking the whole time, like, Scott, move here. Come on. Like, I'm like barking at Scott. Like, we got to go here, Scott. Come on. Let's go to this game, whatever. But, you know, we at Blogging the Boys spent all of Friday talking every Cowboys fan down. I can't believe we only beat the Titans 27-13. I can't believe that we just barely crushed this team. We were favored on the road by 13.5. We covered. We really stink out loud. Lo and behold, Sunday comes around the NFL. A lot of Cowboys fans, hey, maybe it's kind of hard to beat some teams. Maybe it's not easy to blow a team out 50-0. Maybe Patrick Mahomes has muddied the water and made everybody believe that being great and elite is this normal sort of thing, even though Patrick Mahomes himself struggled on Sunday afternoon. Pete Sweeney, are you ready to fly through everything that we saw? We normally go very long, so we should try to, you know, kind of kick this up a notch.
Yeah, let's try to kick this up a notch and go a little faster today. How about we try to do that?
Can I get a vroom vroom? Nice. All right, let's start with the most seismic thing that happened. The Philadelphia Eagles, back-to-back weeks, have had an opportunity to clinch not only the NFC East, but the number one seed in the NFC. And for the second straight week, they have failed to do so. The New Orleans Saints outlasting them 20-10 just a few hours before their season ultimately ended. When the Saints won this game, they were still a relevant team as far as the playoff mix was concerned. Their first-round pick next, or this year, now that we're in 2023, does belong to the Eagles. But on Sunday, everything belonged to the Saints. Taysom Hill and Andy Dalton were dotting up that Philly secondary early on. Gardner Minshew did not have the same success that he did on Christmas Eve against the Cowboys. He had the big touchdown to AJ Brown that kind of kept things close, but ultimately it was all Saints, and now everybody's concerned about this Eagles loss. This opened the door for the Niners, well, not the Vikings, we'll get there, for the Cowboys certainly, and maybe for the Bucks to have a different opportunity a week from now as we discuss with James.
Yeah, it has made week 18 a little bit more interesting. And I think the takeaway here is definitely on the Eagles side, right? The Saints are looking toward next year. We'll see what ends up happening with them. But this is a Saints team that has really nothing going on, nothing to play for. The Eagles have a lot to play for where they can have some comfort here in the final week, and they've now given that away. The Saints were 7 of 16 on third down. They were able to get 313 net yards. You mentioned them.
No points in the second half.
Going at the Eagles secondary, they did get their final touchdown.
Oh, wait, I'm wrong. Sorry, my bad.
They did get their final touchdown on an interception return. Right. So that's what you're referring to. What I would say is I think what we've seen with the Eagles now, and they're going to get Jalen Hurts back, and that changes the game certainly. It's such an upgrade over Gardner Minshew, an MVP candidate. But I think what you're seeing right now is just a question mark about the Philadelphia Eagles, and really I think the NFC as a whole. I look at the NFC playoff picture, and that is going to be what this podcast is about as we talk about these games. And you have the Eagles, the 49ers, the Vikings, the Bucks, the Cowboys, the Giants, and then
one of three, Seahawks, Lions,
probably
Packers.
The Packers. And I just look at that group of seven, and I would not, even if it's, you want to sell me the Giants right now with the way they're playing all of a sudden.
I'm not going to do that.
I wouldn't be stunned if any of these teams win the NFC side of the tournament. Like, I think the AFC is a three-team race. I would be really shocked if it wasn't Cincinnati, Kansas City, or Buffalo. Whereas the NFC,
the Chargers there. Like, let me call it a four-team race.
Whereas the NFC, to me, is just wide open, especially with how the Philadelphia Eagles have not regressed. We were worried about this. We were like, is Philadelphia peaking too early? Because they look like the best team in the world, what, around week six, week seven. And you're seeing some problems there and wondering about Jalen Hurts' health, and they desperately, desperately need him to be playing. And now you have a scenario where they might not even be in the one seed after it'll kind of look like it was going to be wire to wire. So it's going to make for a more exciting NFC tournament. And I really, truly think it's just anyone's game.
it's an unfortunate, first of all, actually, if you're going to include the Giants as like a team that can come out of the NFC, then you definitely have to include the Chargers as the team that can come out of the AFC. But that's a different point. Anyway, it's unfortunate to say this, but it's just the reality of the NFL that injuries are a part of the season, right? Like every team, generally speaking, has to deal with some sort of injuries. And the bug has come for the Eagles over the course of the last few weeks. Obviously, Jalen Hurts missing the last two games is a massive factor in what has happened against the Cowboys. The Eagles lost Lane Johnson, and him missing this game was a big old deal. I don't know their record off the top of my head. I know Rachel and everybody at BGN covered it, but they are awful without him. He is the true Jenga piece, the non-quarterback one of that team, as Dave Damashek likes to refer to them. Josh Sweat left this game very early on, was carted off with a neck injury. He did have all mobility in his limbs. He tweeted after that he would be back this season. Obviously, that's a bit vague. That can mean next week. That can mean the playoffs or whatever the case may be, a divisional round if they pick up the bye. Avante Maddox was injured against the Cowboys. Like, it is hard. It is hard to come back and deal with all these things. And we don't know the situation with Jalen Hurts as far as like how ready he is. Is he 100%? Is he 91%? I believe he did not take any first team reps last week. And we don't know what the Eagles would have done had they clinched against Dallas or had they clinched against New Orleans. Would they have played Jalen Hurts? Either way, they're now in a position where they have to. They have to play him now because there's too much on the line. You go from the one seed to the five seed if things ultimately don't go your way. It's the cost of, you know, we sit here and we talk about like, sometimes fans get a little bit, and I know you've experienced this because of all the success that Kansas City has had. Like, even when there's something on the line, people say, well, let's just like, we can win anyway, right? Like we don't need to like play everybody. We should be able to win this. Let's just rest this. No, if you don't win one of these games, you leave something that has to be done, and anything can happen when something has to be done, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think what is really scary in the prospect of Philly right now is it's a divisional game and it's a franchise in the Giants who really get a little bit of juice by that game before the playoffs. Everybody remembers when they didn't beat the New England Patriots, but they played them really tough in that final game. It's kind of NFL legend at this stage where, and it appears they're going to try to play these starters, and it's another division game. Like, it's not a guarantee that the Eagles, because they have something to play for and the Giants don't, just win that week 18 game. It's likely. Let's be honest with
sure.
ourselves here.
Let's spin into the Giants, like kind okay. of a natural segue. So the Giants, because, you know, in the spirit of moving on quickly, the Giants blasted the Colts 38-10 on Sunday afternoon. Great win. I think this was the Brian Daboll coach of the year. Like, you could like hear the like the lock closing, you know what I mean? Throw away the key. Very, very just an incredible Daniel Jones performance. I had a 91 yards on the ground, two rushing touchdowns, much to my chagrin, going up against him in my fantasy title game. Four touchdowns all the way overall. Kind of a quiet game for Saquon Barkley. A huge game for the Giants defense, although kind of a poor moment, it seems, from Kayvon Thibodeau with Nick Foles lying on the ground. Obviously, her and Thibodeau celebrating. A lot of people upset that Thibodeau is still celebrating on the sideline. But we mentioned it. They win. They're in. Not only are they in, they are entrenched. They are the sixth seed in the NFC. They will visit the three seed. Right now, that would be the Minnesota Vikings in the wild card round of the playoffs. So they have nothing to play for. Next week's game is in Philly. You don't know, like you said, if they're going to feel the urge to move, you know, in one way or the other. You talked about that was the week 17 game in 2007. The Giants hosted the Patriots. New England was 15-0 at the time. They did win to get to 16-0 and ultimately lost to the same team in the Super Bowl. Also lost, people forget, that was the night that Tom Brady broke the then record for most touchdown passes in a regular season. And on the same play, Randy Moss broke the record for most receiving touchdowns, 50 for Brady, 23 for Moss. Again, a lot has happened as far as passing records since then. But additionally, Pete, and again, you're a Giants guy. Shout out to the Sweeney family. 2 years ago, in 2020, the Giants beat the Cowboys in week 17 to get to 6-10 on the season. And they needed the Eagles to beat the then football team that you were all about right. that night on Sunday Night Football. And had Philly won, New York would have won the NFC East amazingly with a 6-10 record. But Doug Peterson very infamously called off the dogs. The Eagles backed off. Jalen Hurts was removed from the game and obviously has gone on to become something incredible. And the football team won the division. And the Giants were very, very, very sore about that. It's dumb that they were upset. It's dumb that they were upset about not winning the division at 6-10. Joe Judge was the coach. So, you know, different regime, but a lot of the same players. You do have to wonder if they want to spoil things for the Eagles now.
When you're talking about the grand scheme of NFL and storylines, though, I think it is funny to recall that now that you brought it up, where you did have Joe Judge. And that to me is what you remember about Joe Judge in New York, is just being upset that another team right. didn't help him. Like, that was the moment that I think you think about the most. But Doug Peterson, essentially after his days in Philly, and you know, he got to the promised land, and then it kind of sputtered from there. He said, you know, he wanted to have more control over his own team, and I'm paraphrasing here, in other words. And then you have him, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, you have him on Sunday playing guys even though they had nothing to play for. And so I think very clearly Doug Peterson did not want to call the code red, but ultimately did. Anyway, back to the New York Giants here. They needed this win. They needed this win.
This was a huge win.
They needed to be as dominant as it was. It wasn't just one of these things where you're playing a lowly Colts team. You're clearly a better team than them. You have been all year, and maybe you squeak by.
16-10 win or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, you squeak by. No, it was this dominant performance. And these type of wins at the end of the year really, really give you, I think, belief in the playoffs. And I think that's all you need. And you talk about who they're matched up with at this stage of the game. It's the Minnesota Vikings, who are the opposite of that. And
they played them really tough a week ago. That was I thought that was a really kind of propelling moment for the Giants.
Yeah, and I just think in the playoffs, we always want to look at the body of work, right, and try to figure out who's the better team. And so now you have this Vikings-Giants matchup that we're looking at, and you think, okay, well, the Vikings are clearly a better team than the Giants. They were this year as a whole, but this is not how the playoffs work. It's who's playing the best football, who's playing the hottest football, who's feeling like they're in rhythm the most at the right time. And, you know, as we'll talk about, I'm sure the Vikings were on the other side of this late in the year. And you got to be a little bit worried if you're Minnesota, because I think the Giants do have some juice. I know that you want to say that the Giants don't have a chance in this tournament. I really think they do. Daniel Jones impressed me yesterday. If Saquon is cooking, I feel like they can beat anyone. And,
he might be the one who gets rest next week. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's the one I think you have to be way more careful with. Mm-hmm. If you're Brian Daboll,
doing these, Alec, like the way that they use Daniel Jones sometimes, it's just, that's how he should be used every week, with these boots where he's running himself. Like, he's not this all-star passer. He's just not. But I think when they start using him, again, Kansas City person who's been here forever now, this is how they used Alex Smith. And this is what made Alex Smith someone that could win playoff games, right? It was using Jones like they are. And again,
not against the Colts, Alex Smith in the playoffs.
Saquon is, well, it didn't, just not. Didn't work out scoring 40. Anyway, I think the Giants are on the right track here. I think they're entering the playoffs really hot, and I will give Brian Daboll the come up of the week, because I do think he is going to manage to win Coach of the Year. And when you thought it might go to Mike McDaniel, that seems like it suddenly isn't happening. You thought it might go to Kyle Shanahan, but I think Daboll edges him out just because of the complete turnaround of this thing. And I think Nick Sirianni, if he still wants a chance at this thing, is going to have to lock up this number one seed against these Giants. So if the Giants have a chance to really, I think, lock it up for their head coach.
The narrative of that is important, right? Like, if the Giants, Brian Daboll did say after the game that he was going to play starters. Again, that's like an emotional thing. Like, we got to see what the week has. But if Saquon doesn't play, kind of like Mike Vrabel and Derrick Henry last week on Thursday Night Football, then it's kind of, if the Eagles win the one seed, nobody cares. But I don't think that propels him. This is Brian Dable's coach of the year to lose. I do want to say, on the subject of Daboll, I'm a fan of aggressive mindsets in the NFL. I'm not a fan of punting and playing for ties and things like that. But the tie that Brian Daboll saved against Washington is critical here. I mean, if they had won, obviously that would have worked out even greater. And so everybody's urging them to try to win. But if they had lost that game to Washington, they would not be in right now. I mean, that playing for the tie was an essential part of this puzzle.
I hate. There's nothing. Well, there's worse takes that bother me, but this is one of my biggest pet peeves. Is that, you don't play for the tie in overtime. I'm with you. However, if it's either tie or lose, stop telling me that you should be going for a fourth down on your own 35. Right? It makes no sense to me. And you're seeing Washington did end up losing and was eliminated. But had they won yesterday, these ties would have kept the Giants and Washington in the dance. And the fact that we're in the middle of the season and you're like, oh my God, he's punting with a minute left. Yes, because a tie is better than a loss. I am not a fan of the go win it at all costs in overtime.
It worked out that they beat them 2 weeks later, the Giants did. You know what I'm saying? Sure. My point is, I will give Brian Daboll the credit because he walked the walk. You know what I'm saying? There was a necessary component to that, and I will give him full credit for it. Good for the Giants. This is their first playoff appearance since 2016. The infamous boat photo, finally no longer a thing. Good for Giants fans. This is going to be a weird offseason for this team. But this is a really fun week for them. Please, please, Giants, beat the Eagles. All right, let's you talked about them. The Minnesota Vikings are now kind of the team with the least to play for. They do have something to play for this coming week in Week 18, but because they got waxed by the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field, it was a wet field. Minnesota Vikings subreddit is all over the place on this. Mm-hmm. The Vikings now 12-4. The Vikings would need the Eagles, the Niners, and the Cowboys to all lose in Week 18, and they would have to win a game that they are barely favored over the Chicago Bears in Week 18 to take over the one seed themselves. But in all likelihood, the most probable matchup in the NFC is Vikings hosting the Giants next week in the wild card round. And it's hard to not feel like the Vikings you and I have defended them a lot, but yesterday was a really, really, really poor showing. And guess who's back? Aaron Rodgers.
I'm keeping my confidence up in the Vikings. I just think they have too many pieces for them to not at least win a game in the playoffs. I just talked about how the Giants can win. I would tend to think the Vikings would be able to handle the Giants if that is who they get on Wild Card Weekend. I think where I'm struggling now is with Kirk Cousins, and the Chiefs and Vikings were my preseason pick for the Super Bowl, so I'm hoping that they can turn it around here. But I look at Kirk Cousins and they're not going to win the one seed. That is over with. I know that, you just mentioned the circumstances that would have to happen. And it's like looking in yourself in the mirror and saying, are you going to possibly get good Kirk for four games in a row? And it just seems impossible. I don't think you're going to get good Kirk. And that's what you need for them to go to the Super Bowl and potentially win it, is good Kirk. And he's just not consistent enough. There's games where he plays really well, like he's a top 10 quarterback. And there's games where you wonder if the Vikings should be looking elsewhere in the future.
And there's times where like they underperform and it's not him, but because of like who he is, it just becomes this thing. But yesterday he was awful.
Yes, I'm talking about.
This was really, really, really bad. A weird kind of wrinkle to this game was Jair Alexander in the week leading up to it kind of called out Justin Jefferson. Right. And, like, that's one of the things that like, generally, when that happens, it's like, okay, bet. You know what I mean? And then the dude who was called out just like goes off. And then it's like, see how stupid it was for you to call me out? Mm-hmm. No. Like, Justin Jefferson, 5 targets, 1 catch, 15 yards. Jair Alexander can walk and talk pretty loudly today if he wants to.
Well, the whole thing was he called the Week 1 output a fluke against the Packers. And
right.
Usually that's... You're right. Sour grapes. Remember, if you go back to Week 1, Jefferson had 9 catches for 184 yards and 2 touchdowns. And as you were saying, this typically goes like, well, defender calls out, position player X, skill position player X, and they just go crazy again. Not the case. And I've said this a million times on this. I love when there's WWE in the NFL. I think it makes for the more exciting storylines and games. And there's extra attention on these matchups because of the chirping. And for Alexander to back it up, good for him. Not only did he back it up, he wore a big hat in the post-game press conference. And I know that there's going to be a point where big hats get old. It's not there yet for me.
It's coming very soon.
Yeah. It's not there yet for me because it's just so funny to me. Like Alexander, this is a moment that he earned, right? He talked his S, he backed it up, and he's sort of bragging about it in the locker room. But the problem is he's got a gigantic hat on his head. So you just can't help but laugh a little bit. Like I love the trend that Brian Robinson set with his big hat. It's very funny to see players talking really serious and tough in the post-game pressers, but to hear that on their head is a gigantic oversized hat.
At one point in the fourth quarter, Jair's big head Packers, the cheese head Packers. Oh, what if it, like, if we think about it, the Packers are kind of the original big head because the cheese is like really big. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So remember Sauce Gardner wearing the cheese head? And Sauce is an awesome player, like defensive rookie of the year. But like, we have come so far from where the Packers were just absolutely buried.
Queso,
it is
Gardner,
hard. It is hard not to feel like the Packers are the better team here. I know the Vikings won the North. I know they'll host the playoff game, but this wasn't.
I had a question for you. And I, cause this is something that I was thinking about. I watched this presser. I watched a little bit of it. And I said, I wonder what RJ is thinking about this. What did you think of Aaron Rodgers' sheepish press conference of you counted us out?
I mean, I'm a big believer in, if you want, like, I'm not saying being arrogant is cool, mm-hmm. but if you walk the walk, you can say whatever you want. And
right.
like, and they have picked up a lot of help. So it's not like, the Packers have just like you know, done all of the work themselves. But like, dude, talk your talk. Like you did call it. Like it's annoying. It is extremely annoying. But he wasn't like Rodgers wasn't a big factor in this game. Like 15-24.
The league loves a winning in for the Packers. I mean, this is a NFL trademark, all rights reserved, textbook storyline for week 18. Right. And we'll see how it plays out.
Well, we don't know when the Packers game. We'll get to the Lions in a moment. But the Packers host the Lions on Sunday. Well, it will be on Sunday. We found out we kind of moved past this, but the Saturday, what do they call the Saturday season finale? There's like an official term for this. The Chiefs visit the Raiders. Is that correct, Pete?
The Chiefs are visiting the Raiders in the early game
Saturday afternoon. Chiefs need to win to keep their number one seed aspirations alive. Yeah. They could clinch it if the Bills lose tonight. So we'll see how that goes. Big Ten Bengals fans.
There's actually some people upset in Kansas City about this. Not that we have to go on a complete tangent, but
we'll get to the Chiefs. Save it for when we talk about the Chiefs.
Just a playoff scenario. If the Bills were to lose tonight, and then the Chiefs win on Saturday. You're kind of letting Buffalo rest players in a way, but it is what it is.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that. Okay, that's a good point. We got to move. Like, there's a lot to get to, so we got to be quick here, quick and efficient. But Saturday night, some people thought would be the Lions-Packers game because the three teams vying for the final wild card in the NFC are the Lions, the Packers, and the Seahawks. The Packers control their fate. If they win, they are in. If the Packers lose, the Seahawks win, the Seahawks are in. The Lions have to win, but also need the Seahawks to lose. So a Seahawks loss eliminates the Lions from the equation. If the Seahawks win, though, and the Lions do win, then the Seahawks are in. So my point is, it looks like we might get this Packers-Lions game on Sunday Night Football, even though the Lions might be eliminated if Seattle wins earlier in the day before kickoff. But to your point, the NFL is like, Rodgers winning in, boom, let's do it.
Yeah, and it's the Lions too, who would need to win. I don't know how the NFL is going to work the schedule. I'm actually surprised that the whole schedule isn't out. You're only getting the Saturday. I guess the teams that are playing on Saturday need to know that, so that's why we're seeing the Saturday games.
Right. Yeah, because they're like their whole process jumps up a day. But I did want to say we have a lot to get to. Like I said, this is the lot to get to episode. Aaron Jones, 14 carries, 111 yards. This is the time of year you talked about it. Who's playing the best, whatever. If you can run the football at this time of year, and like big proverbial statement here, you have a chance. You know what I mean? Like if you can just win that way, you can dominate.
It's like this. It's like, you know, as great as San Francisco looks, who wants to play the Packers in Wild Card Weekend, right?
Like nobody does. As like they're in everybody's head.
Minnesota has been all year, same thing. Like I just said, like who wants to play the Giants when they look like they're playing well? Like, that's what makes the NFC so wide open to me.
Well, I don't think anybody's scared of the Giants the way they're scared of the Packers. But let's get to the Niners.
You look across the field, and there he is, Danny Dimes, staring you down.
The Niners flew very close to the sun on Sunday afternoon. 37-34, the final score in overtime. Robbie Gould missed the game-winning field goal in regulation, which sent it to the extra period. The Raiders got the ball. Oh, man. Jared Stidham, who played very well through just an awful interception. San Francisco returned it. Easy peasy. Kicked the field goal. Get to 12-4. As mentioned, the Niners now the 2 seed in the NFC. So if they don't get the 1 seed and Green Bay gets in, it would be Aaron Rodgers, not at Candlestick, but at San Francisco, which has been his house of horrors, generally speaking. They might be the one team who is not afraid of him because they have owned him. But the Niners could climb as high as the 1 seed if they beat the Cardinals next week. And obviously, if the Eagles lose, Christian McCaffrey went off. 19 carries, 121 yards, and a touchdown. Chipped in 6 catches for 72 yards as well. This was the Brandon Ayuk game, though, Pete. 9 catches, 101 yards, 1 touchdown. It's crazy to remember that this team still does not have Deebo Samuel. I mean, him coming back is going to change the equation all the more. Brock Purdy continues to get it done. 22 of 35, 284 yards, 2 touchdowns, did have a pick. But Brandon Ayuk was a huge, huge, huge development in the second half as they were climbing towards putting this game on ice.
This is a repeat of 2019 for the 49ers when they went on the run. And, they have the ultimate weapon in Christian McCaffrey, who looks as good as he's looked in years and as healthy as he's looked in years. And I just think they're a team that should rightfully be upset if they don't end up making it to a Super Bowl, especially as the Eagles have sputtered a little bit in the final weeks. I just don't know in a you have to pick who's going to get to the Super Bowl out of the NFC scenario. You're not really heavily considering the 49ers if you're making that pick. I think on the Raiders side, you learned a little bit about how Derek Carr isn't the guy and how maybe this team just should have been throwing as many targets as possible every game like the Packers did to Davante Adams. Davante Adams.
Oh, that catch at the end was incredible.
He's still that guy. And to me, Jarrett Stidham's performance, I did not expect this week. I thought he'd be fine. But he looks like a guy that should at least get consideration next year for a starting job. I think,
or like you need to have that backup, right? Like if you have like what the Eagles have going on right now, you know what I'm saying? You got to have that dude who can come in and pinch hit. And he looks like that guy.
At least a career backup in the NFL. But I think there's upside there to seeing if he should be in a quarterback competition. I don't think he should enter the next year. Like Derek Carr, they're going to move on from Derek Carr. It seems like Jarrett Stidham should be in that mix. I think he should bring in a veteran to compete with him, but have an actual competition. I mean, Jarrett Stidham, when he was feeling himself, let's see how he does next week. I think he'll get another opportunity, but I think the Raiders might have something there. That's not going to be an easy out for the Chiefs. I don't want to get off that when I continue about the 49ers. 49ers defense is championship caliber. They're going to get Deebo Samuel back. Brock Purdy's good enough, just like Jimmy G was good enough in 2019. And they're a team that you feel like, I think right now you feel the most comfortable saying they're the most complete. The only thing is the quarterback, right? Can he be outdueled with an actual starting quarterback that isn't Mr. Irrelevant in the NFL? I think that's where the golden question is going to be for the San Francisco 49ers.
I mean, it's hard not to believe in them. They're like, just for context, as somebody in the NFC, like they're the team I'm most afraid of. I'm most afraid of the 49ers.
I would be too.
I mean, they just look, and again, like Deebo list right now and look this way, that defense, I mean, had a little bit of a rough go early on, but that's going to happen, right? Like it is crazy to think that they were down 24-14, like the Raiders. And to your point, like just to tie a bow on the Raiders, maybe season, I guess, because you know, we won't care about them next week, but like, it is like last week was the, like in the Derek Carr aftermath, it was like, oh man, they're going to get a second round pick. Derek Carr is going to take the Jets to the playoffs next year. I do like, it's one game, so I don't want to like overreact, but it is a little bit of like, huh? Okay. Maybe Derek was a bigger part of the problem than we were all like willing to admit a little bit here. I will say, like, a part of me allowed myself to kind of read all the pieces last week and be like, I wonder if they trade Devontae. Like maybe they're just want to like completely, totally reset. This seems like the spot for Tom Brady. I know you would love that, obviously, in the AFC West. Tom Brady, Davante Adams, if they do like super team it up, Josh Jacobs comes back, like that could be a lot of fun in 2023.
I think he might be going to the Raiders. I mean, I really, really do.
It makes sense.
I don't, you know, because I think he would ideally like to be in San Fran, but I think it's a little too muddled with Trey Lance. And you know, I think Tom's probably fearful that stats would go nuts and he doesn't want to see that on social media if they were to bring him in. And so, yeah, I think Vegas feels right for Brady next year. And there will be, again, Brady with Stidham from that New England connection.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
The Kansas City Chiefs flew close to the sun themselves, 27-24, the final score over the resurgent Denver Broncos. Last week was the week that everybody kind of stood up for Russell Wilson in the aftermath of Nathaniel Hackett getting fired. And Russell, this is his best game of the season, right? Like, and I'm not trying to be tongue-in-cheek or silly. Like, he was really good in this game. I mean, 10-6 was the lead for Denver. 17-13 was the lead for Denver. They got close at the end, and you kind of thought maybe they're going to pull this out one more time. Russ had an awesome rushing touchdown in this game that you kind of thought, like, why haven't they been doing this all along? Like, it was a weird you know, kind of frustrating yet promising performance, I think, for Broncos fans. But at the end of the day, this is all about Jerick McKinnon and how he is finally, I feel like Jerick McKinnon has been a thing for like 10 years at this point in time. And now all of a sudden, Andy Reid has unlocked him. The Chiefs, I wouldn't say steamroll, but they continue to move on. They are alive for the number one seed. They will play Saturday, as mentioned.
Yeah. It's hard to know what to make of Denver right now. If Russell Wilson played the Chiefs every week, he would have had great numbers this year. He didn't, and didn't largely have good numbers. And you wonder how much juice is from the interim head coach. I think there is some juice that you get from the first game when you make a big change like that. And the Broncos stayed in it, and they actually had a lead. They had a 17-13 lead in the third quarter. And I was turning to people, you know, while we were at the game there, and I was just like, They could really win this game, which would be insane. But Mahomes didn't play. It's weird because Mahomes didn't play as good as he usually can, and he still throws for 328 and three touchdowns. It was strange. And I noticed that he was off his mark. I got a little bit of heat from Chiefs fans on Twitter, but immediately after the game, he is saying, well, I missed a lot of deep shots today, and I was off my mark, essentially. And I think, you know, the Chiefs are playing well enough. I just don't think they're playing well and complete enough to feel like, okay, they're going to certainly win this AFC tournament. And I also think another week when you lose Joe Tooney again in this game, the left guard, all-pro left guard, to a re-injury of an ankle, and you're still waiting on Mecole Hardman back, they could really benefit from this bye week, just like any team. But I just think the Chiefs could really, in my opinion, afford a complete reset. Mahomes came up a few weeks ago with a thumb issue, hasn't really been talked about, and it just hasn't looked exactly right. He's still making these plays, he's still throwing for 300 yards, but he hasn't looked at as good as he did maybe earlier in the season. So I think the Chiefs will, you know, they went a little bit far in the press and post-game press to say, like, we'll be watching the Bengals game. I think they're going to be on the edge of their seat tonight rooting for the Bengals. They really desperately could use a week off for both the home field advantage, the easy playoff win, but also I just think getting healthy and giving themselves a little bit of a reset here.
I will say, so I'm in a weird place with the Chiefs. Like, I trust them more than ever. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, the body of work is so vast at this point, right? Like, you kind of trust them no matter what the circumstances are. However, also more than ever, I kind of feel like they're just like a normal, very good team in the AFC, right? Like in years past, and like, I think that speaks more to the conference than it does like the Chiefs coming down. You know what I mean? Like in the past, it's felt like there's a sizable gap between the Chiefs and everybody else. I feel like that gap is smaller, if it even exists at this point, between them and say the Bills or the Bengals or maybe the Chargers. I'm coming around just a little bit on the Chargers.
Tom Pelissero had this stat last night. I don't know if you saw this, but for 33 years in a row, four teams that haven't made the playoffs are going to make it this year again. And I just think the NFL's done.
You're saying the year before.
Yeah. That missed. So the playoffs.
You worded that very weirdly. Okay. So you're saying 33 years running, a team's going to be in the playoffs that wasn't in it the year prior.
Four teams, at least four.
Oh, at least four. Holy crap. Okay. Wow. So, that's nuts.
So what I mean by it, and why I bring it up in the scope of the Chiefs and really the NFL as a whole is the salary cap has done a really good job. The way they do their draft picks.
Parody, right? Baby.
Parody. And I truly think the rest of the league is going to roll their eyes. I truly think the Chiefs saw this as a transition year. Not to say it's a rebuilding year, but I think they accepted that they're going to be a little bit worse than they've been. And they traded Tyreek Hill, got all these picks, got younger, didn't really spend a ton of money in free agency, wanted to maybe, I think, spend money next year's free agency, had the question with Orlando Brown Jr. They had money tied up. And I think they said to themselves, hey, with the way that the rest of the division is loading up, let's just make the playoffs and see what happens. And what you're saying is what I sort of expected with that mentality that happened. It's like, they're good. You trust them, but they're just not those Chiefs of previous years. Doesn't mean they can't win the Super Bowl, because I just think the league is so wide open. But well, I think you're to that less point, confident like, than previous years.
Well, and to that point, like sometimes even when you are that team, you don't win the Super Bowl.
Right.
2018 Chiefs as an example, right? Like you can be the, like, and we talked about the Eagles. You can win everything in October and November and even
not the Premier League. It's not the Premier League. It's a tournament, right? It's a tournament. And are you playing the best? Are you healthy?
The four teams that Pete is talking about, at least four teams, the Chargers weren't in the playoffs a year ago. They are already in. The Ravens were not in the playoffs a year ago. They are already in. The Giants were not in the playoffs a year ago. They are already in. The Vikings were not in the playoffs a year ago. They are already in. We could still get the Seahawks or Lions. They were obviously not in the playoffs. And depending on what happens on the AFC side of things, the Dolphins, if they got in, or the Steelers, obviously, would add to that total. But that is pretty wild. You can, you know, there's 14 teams who make this tournament. So you're talking about just under a third of them is new on an annual basis for over three decades now. But okay, so we move on past the Chiefs. Let's quickly, the Jaguars had nothing to play for. You touched on this. That didn't stop them from running all over the Houston Texans, 31-3, the final score. They did play. I mean, the Jaguars did, and the Titans, their week 18 opponent, chose not to, generally speaking. I mean, people say this, by the way, like, and this is the case no matter who you are. People like with the Giants, people are like, oh, they're gonna rest all their starters. You do not have 90 players on your roster. Like, you cannot rest all of your important, like, yeah, you can, like the Titans on Thursday night rested Derrick Henry. You can do things like that, but you have to play some dudes. It's not what you think it is in your mind.
Andy Reid's strategy always is just sort of like rest the stars, and right. Guys who want to play can, whatever you want to. I tend to like this from Peterson, but we only like it because Trevor Lawrence didn't get hurt. Travis Etienne didn't get hurt.
Exactly.
This could be really silly.
So the Titans waved the white flag on Thursday night. They lost, doesn't impact them. The Jaguars played to win, won thoroughly, and people can argue, and now they have momentum or whatever. Trevor Lawrence, 17 of 21, 152 yards, no scores, did throw a pick. CJ Beathard came in. So there was definitely a sense of like, okay, we're good. Let's get, you know what I mean? Let's get out of here. Travis Etienne, 9 carries, 108 on the ground, did have the score. Jamichael Hasty had a score. Just a really good day for the Jaguars. Another whatever day for the Texans. They have lost every game at home this season. Houston Texans.
The JP Acosta Jaguars. I love it. I think they're a spicy team. I think you talk about your house money team. This is the Jags this year, and we'll see what they do in the playoffs. But they're a team it's just no one is going to. It's like, you know what, the Julian Edelman, no respect. Mentality of it. The Chiefs and Bills and Bengals are worried about each other. One of these teams is gonna have to play the Jaguars eventually, if they were
see,
able,
like, I think you're putting the Jaguars in as that fourth team above the Chargers, and I think that's still a little bit too much left for the or not enough left for the
so
Chargers.
You believe the Chargers would go into Jacksonville and win that game?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay,
I think they'd even be favored in that game.
I know
that the Jaguars beat the Chargers.
Maybe a point favorite, maybe 2 point favorite, maybe a 2 point favorite. But I you're talking about a 2 point favorite. What is that? A coin flip? So I'll take the home team there.
The Detroit Lions needed to win to keep their hopes alive. As mentioned, they have to beat the Packers in week 18 and hope that the Rams beat the Seahawks, but they took care of business on Sunday afternoon at Ford Field against the Bears, 41-10. The final score. Jared Goff was dealing again, 21 of 29, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns. Jamal Williams, 22 carries, 144 yards and a touchdown. DeAndre Swift chipped in for 78 yards on the ground and a score. He also caught one of Jared Goff's touchdowns. Justin Fields racked up 132 yards on the ground. This was kind of like a chalk game, right? Like the Lions offense was on fire at home, indoors. Justin Fields did Justin Fields things. The Lions blew out the Bears.
Yeah. I know that some people were getting on Justin Fields. Justin Fields needs help. So, I mean, enough of this, him not potentially being a franchise guy. I know there was a Chicago, I think I'd read that one of the Chicago announcers or one of the announcers on the telecast were like, we'll see about Justin. Like, so we'll see what?
Yeah, we know. Yeah, we know.
On the Lions side, because we're trying to roll through this quickly, I know we're talking about this game, but it's just hard not to think about that loss to the Panthers because I don't think they're going to get in. And,
or the loss to the Seahawks. Like, that's the one really holding them back.
I don't think they're going to get in, and this would have been a really fun playoff team to watch, and I just don't think it's in the cards for them.
Once again, because it does feel like everyone's rooting for the Lions outside of, I guess, the Packers. They need a win and a Seahawks win. There are some tie situations, but, like, whatever. I mean, like, you know what
I'm
saying?
They need a Seahawks loss, no?
I'm sorry, you're right. They need a Seahawks loss, which will probably happen before they play. And that's the thing, like, I kind of want the Lions-Packers game on Sunday Night Football, but it will be such a bummer if the Lions are eliminated. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to watch that. Like, I don't want to watch them all sad. You know what I mean?
You would love to know. They're going to have to play the Seahawks and this Lions-Packers game at the same time, I'd imagine. Because that's what the NFL is doing with the scheduling. They're putting it in a way where the most possible teams have to play their players.
I do think, to your point, the Bills – got a little bit of a sneaky edge. You know what I mean?
They did. It's okay.
But so, like, to Pete's point, I almost said to Chief's point. If the Chiefs lose for whatever reason on Saturday, the Bills, assuming the Bills win tonight, all of this, the Bills clinch the one seed, right? Or if the Bills lose tonight and the Chiefs lose, the Bills know what position they're in. They need to win to get in.
Right.
I mean, so
win, like, win for the top seed, essentially. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But like, we all think that the NFL is going to put the Cowboys and Eagles games on simultaneously, because what you don't want is, say, the Eagles play first, they win, then Dallas knows they can rest their starters. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't, like, you should, the Chiefs and Bills should have played at the same time, again, is my point. But.
Well, that was my point. And there was a debate on in radio this week. That was my point. And I had made this one. I was like, there, in my, coming from a Kansas City standpoint, I thought there was no way that the Bills and Chiefs wouldn't be playing at the same time.
Right.
But I think the NFL saw how the Raiders played and were really interesting this week. And I think by making,
maybe they think the Bengals are going to win tonight too. So you've got the Bills.
I think there's a very real chance that, yes, I think that there's a very real chance the Bengals win tonight. I think the NFL saw that and said, okay, if the Bengals are able to edge the Bills, this is going to be really exciting on Saturday for the Chiefs to clinch. But you're right.
That has such a cascading effect, because if the Bills were to lose tonight on Monday Night Football, and then the Chiefs win on Saturday, Chiefs are the one seed, Bills are the two seed. I'm sorry, no, the Bengals can still be the two seed. So the Bills,
so
technically
now
have
the
something
Bills
to
and,
play for.
Yeah, the Bills, and if you play the Bills and the Bengals at the same time next week, mm-hmm. then they're still playing guys, because you're going to want the two seed over the three seed if you're the Bills.
Right.
So there is... There is
okay. Stuff. There's a lot going on. We're way lost in the week. We got to move on. The Bills next week, though, they still have to play tonight, but the Bills will play the New England Patriots, who need to win that game to get into the playoffs. A big reason why is because they beat the Miami Dolphins on Sunday afternoon. This did feel like the, you know, final, like, you know, like the car was sputtering, like, you know, like on the Mike McDaniel Dolphins this year. 23-21, the final score. It just was not going to happen with Teddy Bridgewater. And obviously he left the game with injury. Skylar Thompson comes in. Just kind of a ho-hum day for Miami offensively. They have to win. They can still get into the playoffs next week. They have to beat the Jets and pick up some help. But it doesn't look like Tua is going to be back for that game. It just, again, it feels like they just were a little bit too early with all of this. And it just wasn't enough this year for Miami.
Well, they lost five games in a row. I mean, this has been the most disappointing team of the second half. You know, you didn't really have to go 5-0 to make the playoffs. You just had to win half your games, essentially. I think the Tua stuff has been a distraction, and it's been a necessary distraction all year, because it's led to some key changes, I think, in the concussion protocol that should have existed way before all
but
this stuff happened.
And that the Dolphins have had to deal with it more
yeah.
than anybody. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And I just think that, you know, this is a tall, tall set of circumstances for it. And look, I think if you're a Miami fan and you bring in McDaniel and it's been so bad for so long, it's one of these classic cases where at the beginning of the season, if you could say we're going to be 9-8 or 8-9, you're probably really excited. It's just the way it played out has been horrible, horrible for Miami. And New England has a scenario here. Bill Belichick, look, it's not like they're at the top of the conference anymore, but win and they're in. And he just keeps on doing it.
Just to be clear, we buried not just Aaron Rodgers, not just Tom Brady, but Bill Belichick. We all danced on all these graves, and yes. It looks like they could all be – well, not looks like, but Brady's in. The Packers and Patriots just have to – they control their own destiny. Yeah. Right. they have earned at least de facto playoff games.
You can't assume the Patriots are going to beat the Bills, but I just think it's impressive that
that's the thing, like,
they're in this spot.
So the Patriots are rooting for a Bills win tonight on Monday Night Football, and then a Chiefs loss, because that would lead the Bills to chill out next Sunday and allow the Patriots.
Assuming,
to
get you're assuming a lot. I mean, you just never know, but yes, that you would assume.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the moment I said the Chiefs could lose. Oh, you're assuming. You never know, RJ. What happens when you assume? Anyway,
I'm saying is to like what the Bills do if they have it locked up, because you just don't know completely. Like, I don't know what McDermott will do.
We have four more games to get to. We're doing okay on time, but let's kind of keep the giddy up moving. The Washington Commanders are...
Oh, my goodness. Major.
Down
Major
bad.
Tutty. Yep.
Like,
yep.
Down so bad. Mm-hmm. Major Tutty is the name of their mascot, not the name that Pete has assigned to their performance
afternoon. Major Tutty on Sunday. Yeah.
So his name is Major Tutty. I think Major is, like, his rank, if I understand. Like, his military rank.
Yeah.
The Commanders unveiled their new mascot on Sunday afternoon. It did not go well. 24-10, the final score. They fall to the Browns. Nick Chubb had over 100 yards on the ground. This was The best performance from a football perspective of Deshaun Watson's Cleveland tenure, only 9 of 18, but did, you know, of those 9 completions, 3 of them were touchdowns. Amari Cooper caught 2 of them, had 3 catches for 105 yards and the 2 scores. But Ron Rivera, this was like an all-time bad day for Ron Rivera. So to set the stage, the Commanders were in a position where they could win their way into the playoffs entering this week. They lost on Sunday afternoon, and they lost because Carson Wentz played horribly. Ron Rivera made the decision over the week, last week, to go with Carson Wentz over Taylor Heinicke. Literally nobody in the universe thought that this was a good idea, yet somehow, some way, Ron Rivera did. Predictably, Carson Wentz was terrible for the Commanders. They lost, and then so the Commanders were part of the noon window for anyone who missed this. And at the time of their loss, they were not eliminated from playoff contention, but a Packers win, which would obviously, you know, come to pass, would in fact eliminate them. Ron Rivera, I don't know if you saw this, Pete, because I know you were busy with the Chiefs playing at noon. Ron Rivera was asked in his postgame press conference, if they were eliminated on Sunday afternoon, would he turn to rookie Sam Howell next week, right? Like kind of get a head start, a look at the rookie, whatever, for the future. And he said, we can be eliminated. Like kind of in an asking sort of way. And a lot of people took off with this, like Ron Rivera didn't know they could be eliminated. And I will give Ron Rivera the benefit of the doubt, or I did at least, in saying like, it kind of seemed sarcastic. You know what I mean? It kind of seemed like dry humor, like just being tense in the moment because it was really uncomfortable. But shout out to Doug Farrar at USA Today, wrote about this on Monday morning. Based on what Rivera said later in the press conference, he clearly did not know that the Commanders could be eliminated on Sunday afternoon, which they ultimately were.
I did see this, and the whole football mentality is always you're not even dreaming that you're going to lose, right?
So everyone knows, that was his defense, was that he was only focused on what would happen if they won, didn't consider any possibility of losing.
But what you have is a key decision here. And look, it's not a given that they win this game with Heinicke, but it's a given that it's a closer matchup. I mean, I think everyone in the world knows that. And I think a lot of people have respect for Ron Rivera. He's been doing this a long time, but he looked very, very foolish. You almost could zoom in and hear the Curb Your Enthusiasm, bomb, 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 boop, 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 where it made for an embarrassing post-game presser, and this comes
16 of 28 for 143 yards, 3 touchdowns. Sorry, 3 interceptions.
And earlier in the year, Rivera remember he had that press conference where he was essentially cursing and saying, I was the effing guy who picked Carson Wentz. And it's like, well, this is a fitting end to that decision-making, because it clearly was wrong. And I think this is a good lesson, I think, for the rest of the league too. It's just like, at a certain point, eat your losses, man. Eat your losses.
Cost fallacy. Yeah.
You don't need to just play a clearly inferior quarterback. Not to say that Heineke's a world beater, but just so clearly he gives you a better chance to win. And I think the players in that locker room know that. And you were beat by a Browns team has been pretty bad. And Deshaun Watson has been pretty bad. And he was able to drop 3 touchdowns on you. And so Washington is out, and it ruins the chances for the NFC East to get 4 teams in, and really it was right in front of them, and they blew it.
I had come around a little bit on Ron Rivera. I thought a week ago or 2 weeks ago they should keep him around. I thought this was kind of an impressive season, but yeah, the going down with the Wentz ship is like all time purposeful ignorance. Like I don't know, but
it's
like
everything that you got? But RJ, it's everything that you hate about Indianapolis and that whole situation,
of course.
But even worse, because it's like you had that information and you still went with that.
And that's the thing, man. Like, okay, cool, you traded for Wentz. Nobody cares. Like, if you make the playoffs, nobody's going to be like, well, you know, but we traded our picks for Wentz. Who cares? Like, you know, it's just, man, like, what a bad scene. The Seahawks took care of business themselves, 23-6, the final score against the Mike White Jets. Robert Saleh told us to keep the receipts. Pete Sweeney and the New York Jets are out of the playoffs with 1 week to go in the regular season.
Just a waste of an elite defense, similar to the Denver Broncos, also in the AFC, on the Jets side. They gotta get a quarterback. They're going to be with a veteran quarterback next year. I think Zach Wilson will be developing behind the scenes, and you know they'll see about him, but they need
Zach that. Wilson's going to be a Commander, by the way. Like, you can just tell.
Could be. I don't know. But you talk about the veteran quarterback carousel. The Jets feel like a destination there. And that's it for their season. I think good to see some progress though on that side. I think Robert Saleh really needed that this type of year. Didn't lead to the playoffs, but I think he keeps his gig. Whereas I think going into the year, you had to see something.
So I mean, they were clearly limited, but again, to like not score a touchdown when your season's on the line is just kind of a bad look.
The Seahawks are alive. You know, they had dropped what was, let's say, five games in the last six entering this game. They needed it to stay alive, and they'll see. They need some help to get in the postseason, but really impressive on that side too. I think just of what they've been able to do with Geno Smith and doubling down on Geno and trading away Russ, which looks like the greatest move in NFL history. And Ken Walker's a beast. I mean, how many times do we have to say it? Ken Walker, he's a beast. I think he's going to be right there with Wilson on the other side for offensive rookie of the year. And maybe this performance helps because Walker put up the production, whereas Wilson did not.
The Los Angeles Chargers clinched their playoff berth a week ago today on Monday Night Football, but they can still, lock up, I should say, not improve, but lock up their position as the 5 seed in the AFC. Obviously, they still have to keep going. But the Chargers, 31-10 victory over the little brother Rams. The battle for LA went to the Chargers. Justin Herbert, an efficient 21 of 28, 212 yards, two touchdowns. Austin Eckler, 10 carries, 122 yards, two touchdowns. On the ground, so big time day for his fantasy supporters. Cam Akers over 100 yards. Remember when the Rams like didn't want that dude? Remember when they were like, he's played his last down?
Yeah.
Like that was this season. You know what I mean? Like that's been such a weird story. The Rams now have 11 losses on the season. They're 5-11. It is the most losses that a reigning Super Bowl champion has ever had, which proves that their Super Bowl win was a little bit more Cinderella than most.
You know, I think sometimes you turn to Tom Brady. And you turn to Aaron Donald and you say to these guys, your picture perfect exit was right there. you'd beaten the new toy in Patrick Mahomes. Walk away. You won your Super Bowl finally. You were
at home. You both did it at home, right? Yeah.
You felt healthy. You were convinced to come back for this, and it has just been so disappointing. And the trade them effing picks or whatever they say was really cool when you're hoisting Lombardi. It's not so cool when you're staring down 10 years of mediocrity, which I just don't know how the Rams turned it around. On the LA side, I think the Chargers are a great story. I think they're a scary team because you think about Joey Bosa, you know, returning to this team and what he means for that defense. And he is one of those players, like you saw in TJ Watt if you're watching Sunday Night Football, where it's just a game wrecker possibility. And this offense is finally looking, I think, a little bit more consistent. Justin Herbert had 212 and two touchdowns here. Eckler, always a beast in both the rushing game and the receiving game. And now they're a team that, yeah, I mean, they're going to be a fifth seed. They're not going to beat the Chiefs for the AFC West. That's over with. But they're a spicy team, as you mentioned, RJ. And like that Jaguars-Chargers game, this is what we're talking about when you're talking about
that's the likely wild card matchup, just to be clear.
Yeah, Brett. I mean, that's going to be a fun game, a fun game. And that's why
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a rout. I think it's going to be Chargers 37-9.
You're a big Staley guy. What I would say is this is why we call wild card and divisional weekend just the best weekends of the year. And I know that we got to get through a week 18. I got my Saturday game that I got to cover, but I'm just very, very excited for these next 2 weekends, not to jump ahead.
The Chargers have the makings, and everybody's saying this, so like, this isn't unique, but like, to your point, everybody's like, oh, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, those are the top three in the AFC. The Chargers have the makings of the team that are going to be like, oops, you know, like, oops, we can't, like the Bengals ago. Like,
they got to get by Mount Jacksonville first. You know, you're looking past the Jags here.
Final game to get to, sorry, Rachel, the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, won on Sunday Night Football on the road against the Baltimore Ravens. 16-13, the final score. Kenny Pickett had an incredible drive at the end of this game. To hit Najee Harris for the game-winning touchdown. I mean, just like it was the most like Steelers-y thing of all time. I mean, it was again. I'm sorry, Rachel, but like any person who had nothing involved here like enjoyed this. Like it was really cool to just kind of see the Steelers-ness take over. Mike Tomlin's Steelers are 500, and with a win next week, they could get not only above 500, but enter the playoffs. I mean, they need a lot of help. They need more help than anybody else that's in the playoff mix on either side of things. It's definitely possible. Like here they are. Watch out. Of course, here are the Steelers. They don't go anywhere ever.
Yeah, you never know. This was a nice performance from Kenny Pickett. I was able to watch this game because I was done with the early afternoon Chiefs coverage. And it was one of these 1960s, 70s football games where it was a lot of rushing. Both quarterbacks threw for under 170. Kenny Pickett at the end of this game, and this is a credit to a rookie that I think is just continuing to push through. He really didn't have a nice night. He was uncomfortable all night. I thought both defenses had good plans. And then there he was again for what was seemingly the second week in a row where he just is like, well, we got one more shot at this. And just and Collinsworth mentioned a Patrick Mahomes-esque pass to Najee Harris to go ahead. And then the defense was able to shut it down. TJ Watt is, like I was saying about Joey Bosa, it's just a game-changing type of player. So that if they are able to sneak in the playoffs, I think it does make them a little spicy. I think it would be a one and done. But again, and I think the story of this game is on the Baltimore side, you know, you need Lamar Jackson. And Tyler Huntley's fine. Their only way that they're going to do damage is by having Lamar Jackson healthy. So we got to watch that. And then on the Steelers side, it's all about Mike Tomlin. Even the greatest coaches have to go through these transition years, these rebuilding years where they go 0-4, you know, they're 5-11. You know, you're seeing McVay, we just talked about, 5-11 right now.
See, that doesn't happen to Tomlin. That's what doesn't makes him to different.
Like, no matter what the circumstances, he finds a way to motivate his players to above 500. And I'm rooting for him in that sense of being able to get there in week 18. We'll see if he's able to do it. Who does the Steelers have? I don't even have it.
They have the Browns.
Yeah, so it's very possible. I mean, that Browns team stinks.
On the subject, by the way, of potential week 18 Sunday night football games, if the Bengals lose tonight on Monday Night Football,
That's not gonna happen. We know that.
I know, but if they do, then their game against the Ravens is for the AFC North. Not exactly like a ton of juice because they're both in. But you know, like that could be, that's one option for. So the NFL might be waiting until tonight, obviously, to decide who they're gonna put in.
I was told yesterday by people at Arrowhead that all the announcements of when the games were coming on Tuesday. And then I think the NFL realized, well, we got to tell the Saturday teams. And so I think that's, like I said, I think that's why the Saturday came out. And I think you get the rest of the games tonight/tomorrow morning. Yes.
Fun game for the Steelers. By the way, I was thinking about this. I need to look into this. If the Steelers do make the playoffs, and again, they need a lot of help. We would have the first and last quarterbacks, obviously, shout out to Brock Purdy, in the playoff field that were drafted. First and last quarterbacks drafted. I don't know that's ever happened. Like, we've definitely had, like, later round rookies make it. You know what I mean? But have we ever had literally the first quarterback taken in the draft, Kenny Pickett, and the last quarterback taken, Brock Purdy, as Mr. Irrelevant? I don't know that that's ever happened. That's
the one thing I can tell you is that Tom Brady was a sixth round pick.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Pete. Let's welcome in the fantastic, the perfect in every conceivable way, Rachelle. Rachelle, first of all, happy new year to you and yours. Second of all, I loved your Instagram post about your new Jordans that you got for Christmas. It was great. So great photography skills on your part. First of all, your thoughts on week 17. Second of all, how down are Eagles fans? Third of all, of course, MFWB.
My takeaways, Patriots safety Kyle Duggar, he's been awesome. He now has three defensive touchdowns this season, which to me is insane. So that was like a huge takeaway. So he definitely was impressive yesterday. You guys didn't touch on Brandon Graham, who despite the Eagles loss, he, you know, made a huge record. Now he has double digit sacks with 11 for the first time in his NFL career. So that was like
another BLG associated with Philadelphia.
Another BLG. Yeah. And so that was a big accomplishment for the Eagles, even though they lost. They're now in the first team in NFL history with four players to have 10 plus sacks. So that was a big deal. And you guys already touched on the Raiders backup quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, who just was a beast. So those were my biggest takeaways from the game. I mean, from Sunday's action. And today I'm going to give him the first MFW of the year. This is a big deal. I'm going to give it to RJ today.
Let's go. Undefeated in 2023. Yes. Wow. What a time to be me, Pete. What a time. Wow. Rachel, who wins tonight? Bengals or Bills?
This is good.
This is the only game this week where both teams had a record above 500.
I think I'm going to put my money on the Bengals.
I'm with you, too. I'm taking the Bengals.
Yeah.
Pedro?
I think
you
it's
sad? Are you sad, first of all, that I won and you lost?
I think it's the Bengals at home. I think it is. Trying to take any bias out of it. I do really want a bye week, but this is another example with the spread of the Bills being favored in Cincinnati of the Bengals continuing to be disrespected. And I don't think it's deserved. And I think the Bills have not played as well as they have earlier in the year. And this is, I think it's a great game, but I think it's a loss.
Pete, give us a give us the sound of your Nespresso, excuse me, your Nespresso machine that you bought. I saw this on your Instagram story. Make that sound for us as we leave here and head into week 18.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.